finally, the one you don't want to hear is groundhog. If you hear groundhog, it means that there is incoming fire onto the post, or it is happening, so you'll hear it, okay? If you hear groundhog, 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 helmet on, body armour on to this location, and Captain Collins, again, will bring you around to the bunker. So I'm now going to show you the location of the bunker.
At the moment, it's just approaching 8:30, and it's hitting kind of close to the 30 degrees. Well, it looks as if we're in for a hot one.
In Lebanon, the situation can really change. If you measure it as a traffic light, you can really go from green to red.
They say the skies of Lebanon are burning, those mighty cedars bleeding in the heat.
Lebanese people seem to have the same connection with the Irish. They're looking forward to the Irish coming back. So,
well, there was the tendency for the Irish to be very sympathetic towards the plight of the Lebanese.
You're in a town, Timnin, where the people know the Irish and like the Irish.
I asked to have the Irish contingent in Timnin because we know them before. From 78 to 2001, they was in Timnin, and it was a great experience.
But hey, don't listen to me.
We're about 2 kilometres away from the village of Yaroun. It's just over here to our right hand side. We're on our way to 650. As you can tell, we're on a fairly rough track. It's an off track. There is main roads, but there's no fun in that. The Israeli border is on our left there, the technical fence it's called. There's a post there. That's a post there on the hill. Whiskey 425 Bravo. They've shotted the whole thing all up here, and then there's another post at the top, 430 it's called, and they can see down. So at all if you go off the verge, there's landmines, you'll see them signposted normally. Fence and bull wire is your best indication just to stay out of things. It's crazy, you see the farmers still having to do their jobs, like going in working in these, in and around the minefields. Like it's by the monument back here, there was a shepherd in and his goats all over the place, taking a huge risk.
37 down there, okay, Alan.
It's late July 2011, and I'm on the blue line with the Irish contingent of UNIFIL at the very southern tip of Lebanon, at its agreed boundary with Israel. As sensitive areas go, this is particularly so. The border area between these two countries was once a so-called security zone. A strip of land extending into Lebanese territory and occupied by the South Lebanese Army, or SLA, essentially an Israeli proxy force. This state of affairs lasted over 15 years until the regular Israeli Defense Forces withdrew its outposts in 2000 and the SLA militia immediately collapsed. The following year, battalion-sized Irish deployment to South Lebanon, in place since 1978, ceased. Now, 10 years after we left, the soldiers of the 104th Battalion return an Irish presence to South Lebanon. And over 33,000 individual tours of duty later, the Irish-Lebanese connection is reignited. As we return, I'm following two of those tours.
One thing meeting you for the first time that people can't help but notice is the moustache. And the moustache, when did that appear on the scene? As a cosmetic, as an aid to your face?
Yeah.
Meet Noel O'Callaghan, Sergeant Major. This will be his fourth trip to Lebanon alone.
Well, funny enough, I nearly always had a moustache from when I could grow one, believe it or not. And the odd time that I'd shave it off, which is usually overseas, my wife would always send me back a warning to have it grown back by the time I come home. I suppose it expanded out a bit from the time I became a senior NCO. I suppose it's part of the image, but it's important that the lads in particular are able to identify who the Sergeant Major is.
Meet Tom Mulderig, Lieutenant. For now, this will be his first overseas mission.
The cadets, the first thing I would say about it was very tough. I suppose you're seeing everyone at their worst and at their best moments, and all the kind of superficialness of a person like is all stripped down, and you see them for what they are, and you all get to know each other over the course of, like, it was 21 months, you know, and you're living in each other's pockets and you're relying on each other to get through the whole thing.
My name is Lieutenant Lee McDonald. I'm from Dundalk in County Louth, and I'm based in 28th Infantry Battalion in Donegal.
Trevor McNairn, based in 4th Cavalry Squadron at Lone, and I'm originally from Donegal.
I'm a Private Rooney, based in Athlone, from South Galway, out here as an MT fitter.
What's that to the layman?
It is a motor mechanic, heavy vehicle.
Commandant Ed McDonough, I'm the CAM Commandant. I have overall responsibility for the running of UN Post 6-5, CAM Shamrock.
We're at the end of April, first week of MRE, or Mission Readiness Exercise. This first week really contains all the skills and the aspects of training that the platoon are going to have to go through, as regards, say, the likes of heli training, map reading, firing of different weapons, counter IED training, all those different stands today that we've been exercised in, and this is just one of them, heli training.
All right, lads, just if you can, just one second there, if you just break in.
That weapon, that rifle they're carrying, is like an extension of their arm, and you will see once you start, it'll slip from their back or their shoulder into their hands very smoothly, and they're ready to go. And that's what it's about. Well, I suppose if you would take it from the lad's perspective, I would be like the father no one wanted, you know. But essentially, I'm the senior NCO of the battalion. I'm the direct link between the officers and the NCOs and men. But I suppose more importantly, I would be a kind of a right hand for the commanding officer and the deputy commander. I would be an advisor to him. And I would kind of also be a mentor to not alone the young NCOs, but also to the young officers.
Within my own cadet class, there may be about four or five. A lot of them would have got trips already. They would have been overseas already. So I'm one of the few that hasn't gone as of yet. So as I said, the two other trips, Kosovo and Chad, were meant to go ahead, and I was due to go on both of them. So
I like to be active. I keep going with the men in Chad. I would have done armour patrols and heli ops with them. It was the same in Kosovo. I did malware and static checkpoints with them. Not as a sergeant major, but as at the lower level, as a private. So that not alone was I upskilling, but the lads could see me perform on the ground. And then that's something that you can look up to. And I suppose, in some respects, the sergeant major's role is a figurehead as well. You know, so I'm very important with that.
When you sit in the aircraft, for aircraft seats facing forwards, you put on the shoulder straps. For aircraft seats facing the sides of the aircraft, you only need the lap straps, okay? So you should have done that.
On the day that's in it today, it is incredibly warm. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be as hot as it's going to be when you guys do get out there, but I mean, it must be 18, 19, 20 degrees, and you're in a lot of heavy gear, so add an extra 20 degrees on top of this, and you got to do all that in the heat.
Yeah, it is it's a big factor, all right, and there is a lot of gear. And I suppose that highlights the importance of physical fitness. Really, a guy can't afford, given the volume of weight and the volume of gear that he's carrying, he can't afford to be, you know, overweight or not be in a good degree of physical fitness.
Personally, did you think you'd end up going back, ever seeing it again in this life?
No, I have to say I didn't. My last trip there was in 2000. And I was out there with the second trip in 1978. And the infrastructure and the country had developed so much, and I have to say I was very proud to be there, because I seen it when I was first there and what we achieved by our presence on the ground. I thought when we pulled over there that we'd never see it again, and I suppose in essence I think what's significant about it then, the last time we were there, there were 3,000 UN troops there. There are now 12,000. So I think that gives you a flavour of the danger level, and I think that's the important one in this, is that we always have to emphasise the mission is a danger mission. We wouldn't be there otherwise, and we have to train for that. Well, there's a blue line there, which it's the job of the United Nations to hold, and the Irish will be part of that blue line, and we will hold our line.
I suppose all their basic training is geared towards serving overseas, or all the tactical training is geared towards that. And unless you put it into practice, it's like training for a football match. Unless you can be on the training pitch for so long, but unless you actually go and play the match itself, you're going to become stale. It's the same with these guys. You know, they all have been looking forward to this for a long, long time. Getting overseas, you can only train for so long until you actually do the real thing and then put your skills into action then, you know, in a real environment.
Training is all very well, but what of the actual environment the Irish are moving into? Retired Irish Army Colonel Colm Doyle.
The objective of the mission is to keep a lid on it.
Colm Doyle served in the very first battalion to go to Lebanon, the 43rd in 1978, and returned to command the 82nd in 1997.
The biggest change, however, probably is the fact that the unit will be operating with the Lebanese National Army, which is a new adventure for the defensive.
Writer and Middle Eastern correspondent Robert Fisk has lived and worked from Beirut for over 30 years. I meet him on a hot, muggy Friday night at Paul's Cafe in central Beirut.
Life is quiet in the south because the Hezbollah want it to be. The fact of the matter is that you have a good relationship with local people who will, many of them, not want you to be hurt. I don't mean you personally, I mean Irish Bat, who would be quite prepared to do their best, not only through Amal, but with Hezbollah, to say, don't harm the Irish. They don't want the Irish to go home, do they? Remember, other units have packed up and gone the moment they thought they were going to be attacked. Now, in the aftermath of the 2006 war, the ceasefire that followed it, the fact that Hezbollah dominates the government of Lebanon at the moment, the fact that you've got armoured units in UNIFIL, this is not the same soft, cheerful, peacekeeping blue berets. This is more helmets.
A lot of the officers would have already served. I would already, example, have served. I served on Cyprus with the 11th Irish Infantry Group in 1968, which was 10 years previously. But a lot of my lieutenants that were with me, this was the first time ever serving abroad. So it was a great challenge. It was a sense of an adventure. And for them, it was a test on their leadership qualities, because this was the first time they were going to be tested on whether or not they had the attributes to be commanders.
When the Irish first came here, and when the Irish left, they were almost two different armies. They learned a lot here. When the Irish army first came, they were coming under fire with the French from Palestinians. During that period, they had punch-ups with Amal, they had punch-ups with Haddad people, and they had punch-ups with the Hezbollah. And they got killed by members of all the militias, including Haddad. In two cases, of course, Smallhorne and Barrett, they were murdered. And it was a very... While it was a sort of cosy, friendly little country, it was very dangerous because you had all these little militia group of schools who were sort of fighting each other, hating each other, loving each other. In the middle of it was Ireland being a peacekeeper.
I remember very well arriving and about to cross the border at Rosh Anikra, which was the main border crossing into Lebanon, and being absolutely amazed when the convoy was stopped. We armed ourselves and we actually took ammunition out of ammunition boxes and put them into our weapons because we were now crossing the borders into an area of conflict. And this is the first time in my recollection as a soldier that on foreign service that I actually put bullets up the spout of our weapon, expecting maybe that at some stage we may have to use it. So it was very tense at the time. As I said, it was the very first Irish to serve in UNIFIL. And to a lot of us, it was a brand new adventure.
But, you know, at the very beginning, I remember south of Tibnin, Haddad militiamen working for the Israelis, chucking stones at the Irish. They had panhards then. And Irish soldiers chucking stones back. And I remember the Washington Post correspondent said to me, this is like Belfast, this is ridiculous, you know. Now, of course, that we're talking now about 78, 79, 80. Since then, I mean, I could tell, I'm not being patronising, the Irish became much more professional. They became much more a trained European army. Not because they went off to anyone else to seek advice. They learned the hard way. They learned how to negotiate. And one of the fortunate things for the Irish was that coming from a fairly agrarian country and a poor country, as it was in 78, it's poor again now, but for different reasons, and from countryside that was remarkably similar to South Lebanon. I remember when Private Griffiths was killed, I went to the funeral and I remember thinking that Galway looked just like southern Lebanon. I said so in my report that night in the Times, for which I was then working.
Well, the land was very barren. Somebody said it was a little bit like what you find in Connemara, all stones. It was very warm. We were under tentage and it used to get very warm at night. I remember even though I was actually living in the house, I actually slept on the veranda. And I'll always remember having a guilty conscience because... when I went to Lebanon that time, we had three small children. And I think all of them were probably still in nappies. And when I think of the responsibility I left to my poor wife when I went off to soldier in South Lebanon with the United Nations. But there was a house in relatively close proximity to where we were. And there was a child in that house that cried every single night nonstop. And I felt it was my wife sending me out volumes of this is what you're missing at home. So it used to lead me going to sleep at night with a sort of a guilty conscience.
Originally, UNIFIL, all the units were put in geographical areas resembling their own home countries. That's why the Fijians were put on the coast, because they were on the sea, they were an island. Norwegians were put up in Sheba village because it had snow all the time. They put the Irish on land that looked very like Donegal, Galway or Mayo. And that was deliberate, that was quite deliberate. And in fact, Timo Goxel, who later became Special Assistant Force Commander, he was involved in doing that. And he came round to lots of us saying, what does Ireland look like? And I said, sort of southern Lebanon, you know, in the middle of the land. I didn't influence it, but it was quite deliberate to put these soldiers where they would feel close to their own homelands.
My name is Captain Ian Kilbride. I'm from Athlone, the Roscommon side of Athlone.
Important, very important.
My name is Corporal Samantha Heavey. I'm based in Two Cavan Cattlebrew Barracks in Dublin, but I'm originally from Kildare Town.
My name is Corporal Michael Murphy, and I'm stationed in the 28th Battalion in Ballyshannon, County Donegal, and I live in Lufford, County Donegal.
Gunner Derek Lynch, I'm based in Mullingar, and I'm living just outside Tullamore.
Gunner Jeffrey Rogers, based in Mullingar and from Mullingar.
858-996, Corporal Derek Carlin, from the 1st Battalion Galway.
How many years are you coming out to the Glen at this stage?
36 years.
And does it ever...
Literally since 1975.
Does it ever change?
It does and it doesn't. Depends on the job at the time, but the terrain is, on a good day, the Glen is a beautiful place. On a bad day, it's a bad place to be, though. Really is, you know. Bad weather, bad... We were snowed in here one period there. Literally couldn't get out the gate. We literally stayed for 2 days. Many years ago. Hard going.
In the Glen of Imaal, County Wicklow, with less than 2 months to deployment, training is as real world as possible. And a little role playing is par for the course.
Of significance or of importance in this general vicinity. The first one is Kiltegan. Okay, it's in a southerly direction and has a mixed population. There's 35% Christians and 65% Muslim in that town. There's also the town of Baltinglass. It's in a southwesterly direction. It's a Christian town, predominantly Christian. And then the last town of significance in our area of operations is Stratford. That's in a westerly direction, okay, and that's a Shia town, or predominantly Shia town.
Tom Mulderick.
We were last chatting in the Curra barely a week ago. It seems like a long way away from where we're standing at the moment.
Yeah, it was. Seems like a long week, actually, since we were last talking. But this week now is just, the ante has kind of stepped up a bit. We're now in the actual exercise scenario, where they've created an actual scenario for us. For all intents and purposes, we're now in the country of Lebanon, and we're now at our platoon post position.
The soldiers' training is loud, in your face, and not for the faint-hearted.
Open the fucking gate! Open the gate!
Here, one man is evacuated on a stretcher under cover of gunfire to a waiting helicopter.
Close up the gap! Close the perimeter!
Noel O'Callaghan.
That group there, of the 29 people in there, the bulk of them are all first-timers. I think of all the privates in it, there's only two of them that's not first-timers.
Okay, right, so that was new for them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, totally new to them.
And we're walking up to a chopper now, which is hovering maybe about 20-30 foot above us.
That's right, and the number two on the chopper is checking the ground to see that it's safe. Don't forget, they also have to carry out their counter-IED drills that they're not going to land on an improvised explosive device themselves. So this is all running concurrent. Absolutely, a lot of dust. And in Lebanon, as you know, it's a dust bucket. Anyway, so you're going to have that. That's a very real simulation of the thing. The lads will take the start off in the front and they'll move in at 3 o'clock to the chopper for mounting the casualty onto it. Now, someone will be monitoring the casualty on that stretcher. For instance, if trying to stem the flow of blood and that kind of stuff. So,
they're running back into the Moag now.
They're running back into the Moag. There's a young lady there, first time trip there now. 2 years ago, she was probably doing her nails. Yeah. She's running with a rifle after doing a medevac procedure for a guy that was blown up. It's real time training.
Well, I suppose this is kind of really the culmination of all the training going to it. And to be honest, yeah, I'll be glad when I suppose we have this exercise finished, and you know, I suppose that will mean that, you know, we've the bulk of our training really done for it, and a few small admin requirements to complete then prior to going. And but yeah, I'm looking forward to it now. I am, but I suppose the focus is still on getting this week finished with. Yeah. And
you finish on Friday, is it?
Finish on Friday.
Okay.
We've been here since Monday. which was a bank holiday, so...
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, my brother got married on Sunday, so... Yeah, it was...
Did you make the wedding?
I made the wedding, but... well, luckily, they gave me a bit of an exemption. I didn't have to be back till a few hours later, but... missed the after party, but... It's part of it.
It's part of duty.
The rough with the smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
For my own one next year now, so...
Don't miss that.
No. I know. I think they'll allow me that at least.
I think they'll hope.
The Lebanese mission at this time is significant as it gives the army back a crucial role, one that's been missing since they left Chad in May 2010, that of full battalion size overseas deployment. Colm Doyle again.
There was an outcry, I think. I remember there was Joe Duffy's programme had people phoning in saying, look, we don't need an army anymore because there's no foreign service and all of that. Now, they don't know, you know, I mean, they really don't know what they're talking about. And I've always argued, and this has come up in programmes before, when people say, well, why do we need an army? Well, if you want to know why we need an army, the Minister for Defence is the man to answer that question. It's not a soldier who wears a uniform who should be justifying why we have an army. It's the government of the day. The Defence Forces is an institution of the state. The state decides whether or not we need an army.
Because of the lull in overseas for the last couple of years, definitely there is a little bit of excitement about going back overseas again and having overseas service as part of the Defence Forces again, because it's an important part of our life. And if we don't have it, it can become very mundane, you know.
The reputation of Ireland abroad in United Nations peacekeeping is higher than anybody in this country probably has the slightest idea about. It is immeasurable. And that's appreciated, I think, by the Department of Foreign Affairs probably more than anybody else. So we should be proud of what our guys do. They do it very well. They've been doing it for a long, long time. Their benefit abroad is greater than the size that we have. There's no doubt about that. And good luck to them to do it very well.
It's Athlone, early June, and with just a few weeks to go to Lebanon, this is the last official function of the battalion before leaving. Amid ministerial reviews, speeches, a march past and mingling, friends, family and soldiers take the opportunity for one last get-together as a unit before disbanding and reuniting in-country on mission.
Are you okay?
Why I've got in there, my husband is heading off.
And he's leaving?
He's leaving five. Five of us behind.
And is he an old hat about the overseas stuff?
Oh, yeah, this is about his 10th trip overseas now, yeah. He's been in Lebanon trip before, so.
And Israel.
Yeah.
And Somalia.
It's very like going home for him, I think.
Guys, can I ask who you've got in there?
My nephew, Shane Corn. And Aoife is his girlfriend. And he's heading off for the 6 months. And his mammy is down there and his grandparents.
And is this his first or is he...
No, he's been abroad. He was in Bosnia, wasn't he? Yeah, he was. He was away before, so it's his second now.
And have you been to one of these before?
No, this is my first time here. To see anything. The weather's fabulous, but it's a bit warm for them, I'd say. They're melting.
Can I ask who you've got?
CS Gretton. Tony Gretton.
Tony Gretton.
Yeah. This is his 18th trip. Yeah. 12 to Lebanon. It's like going back home again. Yeah.
You'd be slightly less. You'd be more the army husband as opposed to the army wife.
Well, the future army husband, you know.
The future, yeah.
Please God, we'll get married this year as well, you know. Have you anything to add to that, T?
That's okay.
TJ's quiet.
Major, how do you think that went? How many of those have you done now, this stage? Can you put a number on them?
Well, the first one I ever did was actually Eamon De Valera's funeral. As a very young... I was only in a very short time, a young soldier. So we did that one up to Dublin, and that took what seemed like months, but... So you become used to the ceremonial.
It has been a bit of a whirlwind. Like, it has been all go since we started in February. Really has, you know. And I'd say if you asked anyone else, they'd say the same. You know, there's been so many aspects of training that we've had to complete as part of the syllabus of training for going overseas. And, you know, it's been non-stop, really. You know, there hasn't been one quiet week.
Have you got home much?
No, I'm living out of my car at the moment. There's about... Well, I've been at home at the weekends, but by the weekends... I'd say 6 to 8 weeks, I'm constantly on the go.
And did any of your lot make it?
Oh, they did, yeah. My wife and my daughter and my grandchild is up there now, and and it's great, very proud for me to be out there, to be looking in and see them there, you know, that they came down for it, you know, because, you know, it is a big deal, and very few soldiers will tell you that when the band strikes up, if you don't feel the hair in the back of your neck, then you're in the wrong place, because there's something just goes through you, electric, and you take the step off it. You're going autopilot.
The passing out parade is as much uniformed pomp and ceremony as it is about family. I chat to Noel's wife and daughter as just behind us he plays with his grandchild.
Is he ever off duty?
No.
What does he do to relax?
He doesn't. Sleeps. I think that's it. Takes cat naps.
Did you know he was in the army when you met him?
Came down, he had joined up, and he was
nearly all the strangers were army boys at that time, weren't they?
Yes. So no. Like, as I say, he was sent down to Mullingar to do his training. And
he never left?
Never left, never went back home.
He's such a whirlwind when he's home. Will it be calm when he's away? Or will there be
most definitely.
That's
yes.
What mum's looking forward to, the calmness.
You know, and there'll be no ring and say, well, what time will you be home for something to eat? Or, you know, like this. We're just...
Not saying we won't miss him, but
no,
it's just...
Of course.
It's he's always in and out the door, and somebody's ringing him, or his 2,000 friends on Facebook are onto him, or
there's a lot of
PR works with Facebook.
PR on Facebook and that.
Do you reckon that the overseas experience has changed as the years have gone on? Because initially, back in the 70s and 80s, and even the 90s, it was, you know, the main point of contact apart from coming home was letter writing.
Yes.
So how do you find that has evolved a bit?
Yeah, I remember when he went, you'd be watching out for the postman then, see if there was, you know, the airmail envelopes, and if you got one of them, it might go a couple of days, maybe a week, maybe 9 days, 9-10 days before you might get a letter. But now, like with Sky and what have you.
Dad doesn't like using that. Remember the last trip, he told us he couldn't get it working, and he could. He just doesn't like to look in and see everyone's face in the other end. So when everyone else is using Skype,
I'm sure he's going to be open for a lesson.
He knows how to use it.
He just doesn't like
to see us at home and know that he's not with us. So
he probably goes off with a picture in his mind, and that's it. Then you know.
He's going with that machine that holds 1,000 films and 500 photographs. Oh, yeah, so he has that loaded up
very
with films and photographs. So I'd say that'll probably be his picture for the next 5 months.
A week later, I meet Tom on the few days downtime the troops get before they deploy.
Today is the 17th of June and my flight goes on the 27th of June. So I'm at home here now after putting in my baggage only on Monday. Today's Friday. Went into the containers on Monday. Having a bit of time off now, just... I suppose at home and to meet a few friends and tie up any loose ends before going. That's really what I've been at the past few days at home in Bohola here. So it's nice and relaxing for after all the pre-deployment training. It's great to get the break from it, you know.
So born and bred in Bohola.
Yeah.
And here we are in Bohola.
Green fields, yeah. It's,
just for the uninitiated, the road to Westport and you'll pass Bohola.
That's it, a road to Castlebar. Yeah, it's about 10 miles from Castlebar and 5 miles from Swinford, and Kelchmaa's only up the road, which is 4 miles away.
And what was it like growing up here?
I suppose, as you can see, it's a quite enough area, but every Saturday growing up would be a day on the farm, cleaning sheds and moving cattle and dosing them and... Oh, it was a full day's work every Saturday. But as we grew older, kind of, I suppose when we moved away from home, it was just really, that'd just be himself and Kevin really doing it, you know. So
yeah,
we were surplus to requirements, thankfully.
In the FCA for a year or two, which was, you know, it was enjoyable. Like, you know, and it kind of gave me a taste of what the army life was like. I suppose it all kind of came from my father mentioned it to me when I was about 14. Just one day at the kitchen table there, he's mentioned it to me about would I ever think about joining the cadets. I hadn't a clue what the cadets was. But he just said that, I was into sport and fitness and that, and knew that. And he said it was just something that he thought maybe I might be suited to. And he said that he had thought of joining it himself when he was younger, but... never really had the opportunity really to go and look more into it, you know, at the time. He said just you might look into it. So I looked into it, and just anything on the army that I was ever reading, I'd cut it out and keep it up in the room upstairs, and started kind of sending away for information and got more interested.
Where does your girlfriend live then?
Claire's from Woodfield, which is, if you think Bohola is small, we're going to go smaller again. It's just outside Kilchimaa on the Kilkelly Road.
Is it a suburb of Bohola?
something like that, yeah. It's just on the way to Kilkelly, like, so we'll go out there in a while, actually. You'll see it's sparsely populated.
I'm a very different person today than the person I was when I went into it. Like, one example, like, the thought of standing up in front of a room of people addressing them before I joined the army was something I wouldn't have contemplated, whereas now, you know, it wouldn't faze me in the slightest, you know. Well, more or less, you know, but definitely you've become out a very rounded individual coming out of it, and you learn a lot of new skills, and you push yourself to limits that you probably didn't know that you had or you could reach, you know.
If you mind me asking, was there a moment?
I suppose it was up in at a local football match up the road that my local club was playing Thomas's local club. So we were both at it, but I didn't get to speak to Thomas at it. I just saw the back of him going. So yeah, then after that I got in touch again.
Claire did all the chasing. She texts me. And
well,
so
well, would you care to respond back, Claire?
So he likes to think.
The other woman in Tom's life is his mother, Christina. She now has to contend with two army sons, as Tom's younger brother followed him into the cadets.
When James got in, like, you know, you would get it from a lot of people, like, oh, you must have great pull or something, like, you know. Cadets, like, so hard to go, sure, it wasn't poor. Like, the thing about Thomas now would have been like, they nearly all have nearly the same kind of personality, very quiet, and you know, you'd never think when Thomas was young that he'd ever go off and join the army. Like, I would never have thought that, you know. No, I'd be worried about him going and all that, you know, but not overdue, because he's well trained. And
there might come a time in the future when Tom and his brother will be overseas together.
That's all the better. At least you'd have company.
And he's not the first one to go overseas, and won't be the last, and I'm not the first one to be just waiting here. So I kind of, it's just accept it, really, because there's nothing else. Sure, what can you do? You have to go over and just kind of get on with things and keep busy, and look forward to when you come home, and keep in touch while you're over there. And because it's, I suppose, maybe it's easier now than it was years ago because of Skype and all that kind of thing.
Will you miss him when he's gone?
Oh, of course, yeah. Every weekend, and the washing, and the making of the dinners, and the stew. He loves his stew, Tom, stuff.
Is Thomas spoiled?
No. None of them are spoiled. None of them.
But if he starts sending back his washing when he's overseas...
I'd do it for him. Okay. I would genuinely do it. No, none of them are spoiled, or none of them would ever take advantage. If you asked any of them, no, I'm not just saying, I have four sons, they would genuinely do anything for you. And I'm just saying it because they're my own, but, you know, they're very well taught in the community. And
it is hard to believe, actually, I'll be gone in 10 days and probably hasn't really hit home yet. Fully, but although I suppose it should do now with 10 days to go, but
the next day I call into Mullingar and visit Noel at home and take a look at his work base in Mullingar Barracks.
We're in your office now, Noel, and we'll explain maybe where we're about. Maybe give us a tour. You know, that's black, a very black and white, an old black and white.
Old black and white.
Without the mustache.
Good, yeah, no mustache, black hair, very much youthful. But the main thing about that photograph is, I think there's none of them left. I'm the last one.
They're out of the army, or
every one of them are gone. Yeah. I hail from Oranmore Road in Ballyfermot, near Palmerstown, and it was great growing up there. Now I must say I loved it there. Where my back garden ended, for as far as you could see or travel, way up to the Wicklow Mountains, were wheat fields,
And it was marvellous because during the summer, you go picking berries or tadpoles and playing football out there. But the sad thing about it, of course, is time took over. And now that's where Whitfield Prison, that's where I got its name from. Well, I'm 53 now. I can serve till I'm 60. Now, my wife doesn't believe me, neither does anyone else. I'd love to retire at 65, believe it, even though I love the army. But I want to go while I'm still relevant to the lads and while I'm still able to match what they do. So I can perform as a soldier, apart from being my rank. So I want to maintain that. I want to go out on a good day while I'm still relevant. To answer your question is, I don't know.
Retirement, that's not a word in his vocabulary, I think. That's the answer to that question.
Yeah. I'm involved in 18 committees at the moment.
18,
yeah. Well, I suppose, first of all, I have to say, Breed is very tolerant. No, I do actually balance them well because some meetings I hold in my lunch break, so it doesn't either impact on the army nor on the on my personal life. In fairness, I think I don't have meetings on a Friday night, though.
Are you good at just sitting down and chilling out?
Well, I can do. I find it very easy to switch off, actually. Breed will tell you that I can sleep anywhere for a start off. I can grab a nap anywhere on the move or at anything. But Breed is always slagging me about. But I do listen, put on earphones, listen to music or watch a bit of telly, and I can chill out and then switch back in then whenever I have to. I came here as a 17-year-old. I've never left it, bar it was to go overseas or do a course. I suppose essentially now as Sergeant Major, the regiment is my life's work. I would have to say I would back it against probably anyone. It is my life's work. I do have a great belief in it, and a great belief in the people that are here and the people that have gone through it. It's not perfect. It's perfect for me.
Private Jane Conway. From Kildare Town.
Corporal Ollie McNamee from Mullingar.
My name's Sergeant Gary Frill. I'm from Castlefan, County Donegal.
Captain Jean Fitzgerald. I'm from Custine Barracks in Athlone. I'm based in the Transport Corps.
My name is Corporal McCormack. I'm from Athlone. I'm serving with the Military Police out here.
Corporal Fergan McLaughlin with the 4th FVR in Mullingar, and my hometown is Ballymantin in County Longford.
Private Michael Kelly from the Carra County Kildare.
My name's Sergeant Jared Campbell. I'm from Redcastle in Donegal.
Ladies and gentlemen, now welcome to Beirut. It is 4:30 local time. The outside temperature is 20 degrees.
Nero 37, back in your location now.
How are you?
Lovely to see
Good
you.
To see you.
South Lebanon, the village of Tibnin, the new Camp Shamrock.
This is my first time in Lebanon as a Sergeant Major, but it's very satisfying because with the camp we took over wouldn't have been in great nick, as we would say. Now, some people may see that as a problem, but for me and the lads, we would see that as a challenge, and it gives you the scope to put your own stamp on it. So if you were to come here a month ago, what you see here now, we bear no resemblance to what we had.
Everybody settled in, I think we're getting a good grip on the country, and we know now what's going on, we know what's expected. So building the camp, getting stuff ready, establishing ourselves out here, I think it's good. Time has flew by, so it's grand.
So what was it like a month ago?
It was very basic. We had a few buildings with walls and a roof, but it wasn't clean, it wasn't up to regimental standard. We're not even started yet, we're only getting into it. But every day our work parties are beaving away. Securing the camp obviously was the first priority. Comfort came second, and then regimental standards come toward to just spruce it up, paint the walls, make them presentable for people and visitors.
What's the first thing that would hit somebody coming to this part of South Lebanon?
Yeah, well, for obviously the heat. I thought after, we had a few 56 and 57 degrees in Chad, and I thought I'd never again have heat issues again, but today it's 38 degrees and it's sweltering, and we're just standing around. When we're working in the work parties or building sandbag positions, the sweat, literally, despite the dry flow, equipment just flows down your back. That being said, the first morning I woke up here, I woke up to the sound of the local Mukhtar from the mosque, and he was doing his prayers.
and there was a mosquito inside my net having devoured me for the night, so that, which wasn't great. But straight away, I woke up, and then you get into it. But I have to say, it's very satisfying too. It's hugely changed since my first trips. This is typical land that the people work and live in, but it's a lot different to the old days, because a lot of it is built up, and there's some fabulous houses around it, and they actually have roads, which is the Arden bomb, the Arden craters in them, so which is a major plus for them.
Zero, send over. Request permission to shut down, over.
As I stand in the middle of Camp Shamrock, looking out on the rocky, arid, rolling hills of South Lebanon, Lieutenant Liam MacDonald describes the area to me.
We are looking southbound here to our front. We can see a ridgeline. Over to the right of the ridgeline, you can see another UN post. This is 6-41, formerly known as Hill 880, which is occupied by the Irish forces prior to our withdrawal in 2001. The village down to its left is the village of Aitazut. And if you come maybe a quarter right to that there on the ridgeline below the UN post, this is the village of Hadata. The ridgeline to our front shields Israel itself, which is another about 4 kilometres behind that there. And you have the main urban municipality within the area. Bin Shabal is approximately 4 kilometres or 3 kilometres after that there. All these areas are extremely sensitive for United Nations within the area.
I'm carrying a pistol here under my shirt, which is nice and discreet. It's a balancing act. For instance, this morning we would have been out with the locals buying supplies and breaking down the barriers. It's their country, they're the hosts, we're the visitors, although we're here to protect them. Tonight when we go out, we'll be in battle vest and rifle, because we also have to show a strong deterrent with the blue flag to say that, listen, we can ante up if we have to. So it's a fine balancing act.
Travelling out of the camp, away from Tibnin, down to the boundary with Israel, I meet Tom. He is, quite literally, at the coalface.
Well, what you see in front of you here, okay, is the blue line, and to the right of it is the Israeli technical fence, and they're...
The Irish Patrol, an 11.3-kilometre stretch of the 118-kilometre blue line, the agreed boundary between Israel and Lebanon, and one of the most militarised zones in the Middle East.
So Tom, you're out here now and you're a platoon commander of 6-50. To people back at home, that will mean nothing. So it's maybe paint a picture of what you've landed into here.
Yeah, I suppose what we're in here is a small platoon-sized post, which is 28 Irish soldiers here in this camp. Very small camp. It's essentially like a tiny little barracks here. And it's an observation post onto the blue line area. We can see the exact line between Israel and Lebanon. And it's marked out there by, there's a series of blue markers, which you can see a distinct difference between the two sides. Lebanon is much more, rugged, barren maybe, landscape, you know. But the far side then, we're looking at green fields, much kind of a more organised system of... as you say, irrigation and that. I suppose it's a sign of maybe the difference in wealth on both sides.
On our right, we're looking out over some tents and the Belgian...
UN Belgian demining team there on our
right. Belgians and the Cambodians drew the short straw and they go into the minefields.
It's a tough job now, there's no doubt of it. I suppose they have the expertise to do it. Yeah, they pitched their tents just outside our camp, and you can see there they have different areas marked into the blue line. I was speaking with their platoon commander maybe a few days ago. He called into the camp here to introduce himself, and he was just explaining that, you know, it can be very slow progress for them, maybe 2 or 3 metres per day towards the technical fence or towards the blue line, clearing minefields, anti-personnel and anti-tank mines, very dangerous. Every so often we'd get word from them that there's going to be a controlled explosion at, you know, whatever time, and just to stand by, we'll get about half an hour's notice of it. It's another step towards the blue line, where they'll eventually put out more blue line markers so that the boundary becomes more distinct.
So as we look out, and that is a minefield.
That is a minefield, yeah, and we've been told that off the main hard surface here, it's not safe to travel across country. It's... you know, that main area to our immediate front is heavily mined, you know.
I watch the sunrise shine through
the clouds. We do gather tonight very much as a family. We come here to this spot where we remember men who have died.
Up one of the Warren of Hills in Tibnin village, there's a monument to the Irish soldiers who've lost their lives in Lebanon. Occasionally, the army chaplain will say a small mass here.
And may Almighty God have mercy upon each one of us. May He forgive us our sins and bring us to life everlasting.
I feel your shadows near.
I am very proud to have the Irish here, more than 400 soldiers from your country.
UNIFIL Force Commander, Major General Alberto Asarta Cuevas.
You have also suffered a lot of soldiers killed in this part of the war. 47 soldiers lost their lives here.
The local people here are very conscious of the sacrifice which the Irish Defence Forces have made in South Lebanon.
Lieutenant Colonel Frank Bulger, the commanding officer of the 104th Battalion.
There is a monument in place in Tibnin. This is looked after by the local population. When we came here, we found the monument in the same condition that we had left it in 2002.
The revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia and the ongoing developments in Libya, Syria and across the Arab world right now informs the context within which the Irish are serving.
Now, with the regional situation, with the Arab revolution, with the death of Bin Laden, with the problems in Syria, the cessation of hostilities here, because it's just a cessation of hostilities. It's not both countries didn't sign any peace agreement or ceasefire, permanent ceasefire. So there are a lot of things that can change the situation at any time. So
Robert Fisk again.
It's a post-Arab awakening. It's affected everyone here. They see the Syrians standing up to tanks in Syria and getting shot down and still going out in the streets. And people say, why can't we do the same? They're not worried about people shooting at them anymore. It's finished. If there was a reason or an excuse for Hezbollah or the Israelis to want a war, that stability will disappear in 1 hour. It was fairly stable in 2006, in the days before Hezbollah captured those Israeli soldiers, which set off the 2006 war, which Hezbollah claimed was a divine victory. It didn't feel much of a divine victory to me because I was there. But I don't think the Israelis won. They lost. And you've got the Israelis who want to prove they can win, which they can't against Hezbollah. They're not up to it. And you've got the Hezbollah who are waiting for the opportunity to prove that they are, again, a resistance movement. And in between these two sides, you've got so many nations in UNIFIL, including NATO nations, with NATO generals in command, to which I can only say, ouch, 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 if anything goes wrong.
Back in Tibnin, and, as always, there is a more local economic imperative.
They give job. This is the first thing. It's one of the most important.
Mayor of Tibnin, Nabil Fawaz.
The employment. The first employment person, that's what I tell, it's the United Nations. Second thing, they are here. They are working all the commerce. You have trading, eating, everything. You have 500 person, around 500 person who are living here. It's an economical situation.
Everything, watch, perfume. And now we have a big big watch of the T-suit, Shiroti, all big make and good price and good treatment.
Meet Mansour Mansour. His store is across from the original Camp Shamrock, and he's grown up with Irish battalions down through the years.
If they start in with 43rd Battalion in Lebanon, when the Irish come to Lebanon, it's coming a neighbor to my house in Hadatha. I mean, it starts in 78 until now. We started a build shop. Before, we didn't speak any English. We started learning it from the Irish, you know. When you learn especially the English or the Irish language, how to start. We've grown up with the business.
Mansour has also been bombed in his own home, losing an arm. And as a result, his Irish connection runs deeper than usual.
In the Christmas night in 80, 1:30 early morning, I went, wake up with a big sound. I think with somewhere else in the world, we found myself is in a big trouble. No hands, no bone is missing here, and stomach is bits and pieces. The Irish was in Hadassah school. It's across my house about 20, 25 meters. It's come down quickly, bring me up to the school. Well, then they helped me whatever they can to bring the ambulance from Tibnin. Well, then they stay with me and take care about me. They plant a bomb beside the door, and they make the explosive more dangerous. By the way, we got most blood is the Irish blood. Most of them engineer, but that's very good. After we wake up about 2-3 days, someone The Irish, they visit me in hospital. I say, how do you feel? I feel so good, but I'm still drunk from the blood you gave me.
The Irish have settled in now. Inevitably, thoughts turn to home from time to time.
Michelle is just going to close our mass now with a beautiful little song.
They say the skies of Lebanon are burning.
I Skyped for the first time last Sunday, under duress, I might add, because I wasn't into it at all, but it was very funny. My grandchild and all was there, my son was there, David, my daughter Rebecca, and of course Breda, and we had great fun. And you get 15 minutes, but you have to call for 15 minutes because everyone has to get on, and it's excellent.
Definitely have to bring the kids shopping, bring the wife shopping, treat her. But I know it's lovely and sunny here, man, but people be amazed how much you'd miss something like a breeze or a drizzle of rain. I just can't wait to get off the plane and be cold. Just cannot wait.
For Sergeant Major Noel O'Callaghan, marking improvements in camp marks time passing before an expected visit by President McAleese before she leaves office.
The reality is that it's another marker for us, and all these things add to it. And they kind of mark off another point on the calendar, another movement towards the medal parade and towards the President's visit and, of course, then our chalk home.
For the now Captain Tom Mulderig, this trip also meant a promotion.
It came, about 2 weeks into our trip here, and it was nice to get it. The battalion commander brought three of us in. We were promoted from lieutenant to captain, all the same cadet class. And, yeah, it was nice bit of news 2 weeks into the trip, you know, to hear. You know?
Battlefield promotion.
Yeah, promotion in the field, yes.
I mean, I miss it. It's part of military service that I miss the most. You know, and people have asked me since I've been to Yugoslavia. I went through a lot out there in Yugoslavia when I was working with the Monitor Mission. But I remember being asked much, if you were to pick what was the best assignment you ever got in your 42 years of military service, without a doubt, it would be the privilege of commanding an Irish battalion in Lebanon. That to me was immeasurable.
Freedom.
The 104th Battalion will serve till November. The 105th have already formed up.